Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features a contribution from Chico Soul and the Sacramento Observer. Segments from KZFR community members include a piece on the 6th Street Center closure by Ken Smith, a segment on Sacramento rail yards by Faye with the Observer, and coverage of the Orville City Council meeting and other news releases by David Foose.
Last Friday, August 18th, members of the public and past and present clients and employees of the 6th Street Center for Youth gathered there for a barbecue. Though the mood was celebratory, with old friends sharing memories and laughs over grilled hot dogs and slices of watermelon, the gathering was bittersweet as the event marked the center's last day of operation. For the last 18 years, the center, ran by nonprofit organization Youth for Change, served as a place where unhoused young people could go during the daytime to find sanctuary and assistance, with everything from a snack, a shower, and laundry, on up to case management and connecting with employment and housing. Stephen Vaughn is a former 6th Street client who was at the event.
So initially, when I was first homeless or really unhoused, I was struggling a lot to just, not really to make ends meet, but to really do any of the basic necessities like doing laundry, taking showers, keeping myself clean, until like my sister just out of the blue just mentioned like, oh, the 6th Street Youth Center, they do a lot of things. And initially I was just pretty like, oh, sure, whatever, a homeless center, I thought, is whatever. But they really did help a lot with things like getting work done, working on work life, school life, making sure I keep on my jobs with their counselors and everything. So they've been a major help, and I would say an absolute 200% success when it comes to, at least in my cases. I do see a lot of people coming in and out, getting services done, and whatever they find success with the service, I'm pretty sure it has been successful for them as well. So I don't see really many people dissatisfied with what work has been done here. If I didn't have access to it, I'm not sure what I would have done. So I'm very thankful that I managed to get the services that I could. I'm also at the ripe end to age out of the services, so it is hitting me a little differently than a lot of people because my services are pretty much over. But other people are still mid-serviced, have a lot of work that needs to be done. So I feel it's going to be pretty difficult for a lot of people that this place is closing down.
The center is closing as the result of the narrow passage of State Proposition 1 2 years ago, which enacted new funding systems and focuses on immediate housing, drawing money away from programs aimed at homelessness prevention. Nancy Jorth, now Director of Social Services Programs at Youth for Change, was the primary driver behind the founding of the 6th Street Center at a time when there were zero services for unhoused youth in Butte County. She explained a little more about the effects of Prop 1 and how it's affecting Butte and other counties.
So our main funding was through the Mental Health Services Act, which started back in 2006. We have a lot of funding streams that come in here and support, but the main funding was under the Mental Health Services Act, MHSA. When Prop 1 passed in the state of California 2 years ago, it was redistributing MHSA money to what they call now BHSA, which is Behavioral Health Services Act. They took a lot of the preventative money statewide and shifted it into housing. So any program that wasn't a direct housing program and did preventative services really got cut. Each county figured out how they wanted to do that in their own way. And it was a little bit of time before Behavioral Health decided which programs they had to cut out of MHSA. And unfortunately, 6th Street was one of those programs that they cut. I am on a lot of different committees, state committees and federal committees, around funding for homeless services, especially homeless youth services. And it has hit programs statewide, the Prop 1 shifts. I think one of the things that happened is the way we, you know, it was marketed, Prop 1 was marketed as housing for the homeless. Who's not going to vote for that, housing for the homeless? But they didn't realize that the money then was being diverted from preventative services that were already in place and already successfully providing services to that population. So statewide, a lot of programs have been hit. Countywide, we're not the only one that was hit. There's 11 other programs in Butte County that were hit also. So some of the other programs like Catalyst and Stonewall Alliance, you know, have the Hmong Community Center, have all been hit really hard with cuts to their services.
At least one other MHSA-funded program has also ended. The Iverson Wellness and Recovery Center closed down in June. It served adults with mental illness since 2009. Stonewall Alliance of Chico Center remains open, but that organization, which serves Butte County's LGBTQ plus community, is also facing budget cuts. Jorth refers to 6th Street's closure as a temporary disruption of services and says Youth for Change is working to get started at a new location, but it won't be a drop-in center like 6th Street.
We are looking at homeless youth services starting up probably in the new year. They won't be exactly like 6th Street, and they'll be at our new location on Flume Street, corner of Flume and 3rd. Youth for Change has purchased a building there, and we're looking at remodeling that building. Actually, I already have the funding to remodel that building. But the funding to actually do operating services is what we're still kind of piecing together. And we will definitely, you know, we're committed to this population and helping this population. So we will have something up and going at the beginning of next year. It won't look like this. Mm-hmm. It won't be the same kind of drop-in, but it'll be definitely like life skills classes and scheduled appointments and stuff like that.
6th Street also served as an incubator of sorts for social workers and mental health professionals. Many past employees were on hand to celebrate and say they found their passion and career paths working there. Johnny Meehan once worked at the center and is now a clinician doing individual therapy for tribal health in Tuolumne County. He drove 4 hours to be at the celebration.
I started in 2010 as an intern when I was getting my undergrad. Spent a couple years here like volunteering and interning interchangeably. Then came back in 2014 as a case manager. I worked here for 3+ years. And then I came back in 2018 as like a volunteer and then like a clinician, got hired back on as a therapist. And so off and on for over just about 10 years. 6th Street was pivotal to my professional development. It's where I learned how to have boundaries and learn how to help people while helping myself. You know, and it's like whether it was undergrad or master's and just kind of just going through the ranks, you know, climbing the ladder as far as helping folks with different titles. 6th Street was always there for me. And the staff there, whether it was Emily or Jennifer or Lauren or Terry, you know, I've always like really attracted these like wonderful helpers. 6th Street's very near and dear to my heart. It sounds cliche to say it's like family, but I can't think of a better word as far as just when you cook with people and you share laughs with people and you sometimes have to take breaks from people, you know, whether it's like, you know, taking my professional like leave of absence and always coming back. It just feels like family. And it's just I love the building and I love the people who've worked here. And in a professional way, I've really loved all the kids who have passed through here.
This is Ken Smith for Zephyr News.
Care, housing, and a stadium inside the multi-billion-dollar plan for Sacramento's rail yards. Hey, it's Faye from Game and Play, and this article was written by Robert J. Hansen and published on August 3rd, 2026. Picture Sacramento's rail yards in 2030. Fans in Old Glory red jerseys spilling out of a 20,000-seat stadium after a public FC match, a century-old brick warehouse thumping with a concert crowd, ambulances pulling into a brand-new all-electric Kaiser Hospital, commuters stepping off a train at Sacramento Valley Station and walking straight into a neighborhood that didn't exist a decade earlier. That's the vision city and business leaders pitched at July 22nd Open House showcasing progress on the rail yards, the sprawling infill project between downtown and the River District. Jay Robinson, Kaiser Permanent's Senior Vice President and Area Manager for Sacramento and South Sacramento, said the hospital's location was chosen to keep space with a membership base approaching 1 million across Roseville, Sacramento, and South Sacramento. Quote, as our population moves around, it makes sense for us to move into areas that give it better access, end quote, from Robinson, who has held the role for 4 years. Robinson said the new hospital also will restore maternal and child services to the area, including care for Black women, something he called central to Kaiser's mission. Quote, it's helping us redefine the skyline of Sacramento, what the city looks like, and I think it's helping redefine the area. It speaks to our commitment to the Sacramento area. It is historic investment, and I think it's redefining an area that's going to help our city. End quote from Robinson. Robinson described the Kaiser model with its emphasis on preventative wellness rather than treatment alone. As central to the pitch, the hospital will have 310 beds, all in private rooms, and will run on all-electric systems with what he called cutting-edge technology through outpatient rooms. Quote, it's going to be a top-notch experience for our members, end quote from Robinson, calling the project a step towards the future of healthcare in the region. Robinson declined to disclose the project's cost. Kaiser Chief Administrative Officer Dusty Miller said the hospital will be among the first fully electric hospitals in California and will focus on high acuity care, including a neuroscience center of excellence and cardiovascular services. Quote, the future is that only the sickest people need to be in the hospital, so you want to have the highest end care concentrated, and that's where we're headed. End quote from Miller. Miller said the hospital is expected to open towards the end of 2029 and will become the third Kaiser hospital in the greater Sacramento region once the aging Morse Avenue facility closes. City Council member Phil Pluckebaum, who chairs the Rail Yards Public Financing Authority, said the project's scale and the brownfield cleanup required before any construction could begin sets it apart from development on open land elsewhere in the region. Quote, when you're doing infill, you have to remove all this old stuff. You've got to shore up all the old brick buildings and repurpose and reuse them. That's how we have to just get to the starting point. End quote from Pluckebaum. Pluckebaum credited former mayor Darrell Steinberg with bringing together the Kaiser Hospital, a new music venue, and the soccer stadium under a financing tool known as an Enhanced Infrastructure Financing District, or EIFD, in the first place. Quote, there's a public-private partnership here. The financing is the key component. It's really hard when one person just goes. The genius of what they were able to do was get a group of people to agree. All right, we're all going to do this. End quote from Pluckebaum. Developer LDK already has completed housing at the AJ's and Wong Center sites. With more phases planned, Pluckebaum said he estimated the full build-out could take a decade or longer, limited less by demand than by lending conditions affecting developers across the West Coast. Pluckebaum also addressed the separate I Street Bridge project, which he called essential for connecting West Sacramento and Yolo County residents to the new hospital. He said the city secured its original budget for the bridge, but construction bids came in well above that amount, leaving officials to close the gap with the city of West Sacramento. He said the goal remains completing the bridge within 3 years, in time for the hospital's opening. John Jacobs, Sacramento's Republic FC's Vice President of Communications, said infrastructure work is underway at the stadium site, with crews installing utility vaults and sewer lines, and roads and traffic signals expected to be visible by the end of the year. The club is targeting 2028 for its first games at the venue, a $450 million project financed privately and led by Wilton Rancheria, the tribal government that operates Sky River Casino. The stadium will seat 20,000 for soccer and expand to as many as 27,000 for concerts and other events, making it the city's largest sports and entertainment venue, surpassing Golden One Center, Jacobs said. Jacobs said a second parcel near the stadium is slated for future development into a new neighborhood once the stadium opens. Quote, so much more, and that's just the beginning. End quote from Jacobs. Alrighty, folks, that article is brought to you by the Sacramento Observer and read to you by Faye from Game and Play.
This is Patrice for Chico Soul. This week, local citizens filled the council chambers Tuesday to protest the sharing of automated license plate data with outside agencies, including ICE. The city of Chico paid $325,000 to settle a lawsuit over police mistreatment of a teenage driver stopped on suspicion of drunk driving in 2023. A watchdog group guides improvements to inmate care at the county jail, and people are beating the heat at Safe Spaces Cooling Center. Nearly 20 people weighed in at the city council meeting this week on the use of automated license plate readers and the sharing of that data with federal agencies, including ICE. They called for increased oversight of Chico Police Department, greater transparency around the city's surveillance practices, and the removal of the 27 ALPR cameras installed by the Chico Police Department. Dan Pantry, a cybersecurity engineer originally from the United Kingdom, agreed that camera surveillance in public thoroughfares should be banned. As Pantry left the chambers after speaking to the council, he elaborated on his earlier remarks.
Yeah, we only have 2 minutes. But once that data is created, it's created. Yeah, and it, at some point in the future, it will be used for good or ill, probably. There's no responsible way to do surveillance like this, basically. Mm-hmm. These license plate readers, they're not just reading your license plate, they're video cameras, basically. That video can be captured, no warrant required, there's no technical limitation on that video being kept around for only a certain amount of time, or only if you did a crime, or things like that, and it can be shared with anybody. Well, I'll start with the thing of being in the UK. In the UK, you're very used to cameras, and you never realize how many cameras there are until you come here and there aren't many. So it was very nice to not see many, and obviously now they're coming back up.
Last month, Chico Soul reported that the Chico Police Department paused sharing with federal and out-of-state agencies on July 8, 2026, after responding to a records request made by Chico Soul. An internal audit into the sharing of ALPR data with federal and out-of-state agencies is ongoing. Concerns around ALPR surveillance has become a hot topic ahead of November's election, with candidates for the two of the three open Chico City Council seats voicing concerns about the technology. The City Council will continue the ALPR discussion at a City Council meeting that will be held on September 22nd at 6 p.m. In other news, the City of Chico paid $325,000 to settle a lawsuit over the way an officer treated a teenage girl during a traffic stop. Chico Police Chief Billy Aldridge referred questions about the settlement to the city manager's office. Butte County District Attorney Mike Ramsey said he is prohibited by law from discussing charges against juveniles. But now that the case has been settled and the girl's mother reported the charges against her daughter have been dismissed, the DA told Chico Soul, quote, I legally cannot say whether we charge Lily with a DUI and resisting arrest charge. as she would have been a juvenile at the time and her case would have been sealed. However, I would not deny her mother's statement that we did so, unquote. The incident, during which then 17-year-old Lily Rush was charged with driving under the influence of alcohol, occurred in March 2023. About 4 months earlier, she had been in an auto accident and had a metal plate surgically implanted into her arm and pins placed in 3 fingers. Her arm was still healing at the time Sergeant Mark Bass stopped her car, forced her to sit on a curb, and handcuffed her. In a clip from a Chico Soul report published 3 years ago, you will hear a few seconds of the incident, followed by Lily Rush's description made several months later.
Hey, she's got her broken arm! Sir, she has her left broken, she has her right broken arm. Sir!
The first time I saw Sergeant Bass, he comes charging at me saying, get on the floor, get back in your car, get on your floor. And then he, at that point, grabs my broken arm and tries to put it behind my back. At that point, I raised my voice saying, it's a broken arm, please let go, this hurts. And he just kept telling me, oh, you're fine, just get on the floor, you need to sit down, you need to listen to me, you'll figure that out at the hospital, that doesn't matter, just a bunch of things like that. So it got a bit more scary for me at that point because I realized my rights weren't being taken care of and they didn't care at that point about my rights. So I got even more scared and started yelling at them, telling them that they needed to loosen the cuffs because they still hurted, etc. And then they told my mom that I was being arrested for DUI and they walked me into the car. That's a summary of it.
Bass, the arresting officer, is now retired. He was suspended after allegedly injuring his teenage son in a fight, according to records the city says it has, but has refused to release. The DA's investigation produced a report but no criminal charges. During his time with the Chico Police Department, Sergeant Bass was involved in 2 fatal shootings and multiple domestic violence allegations. There's also law enforcement news at the county level. The Butte County Sheriff's Office is now addressing a series of healthcare issues revealed in an audit of the county jail. The watchdog group, Disability Rights California, audited conditions at the Oroville facility after receiving complaints of disability rights violations last year. It found that many inmates who need medication-assisted treatment for substance use disorders weren't getting the help they needed. A spokesperson from the watchdog group said Disability Rights California will soon provide more detailed findings. It may be common knowledge that 100-degree-plus temperatures are increasingly more frequent in Butte County in the age of global warming, and heat-related illnesses, heat stroke, dehydration, and in extreme cases, death, disproportionately affect people without housing. When Safe Space steps in to provide a cool refuge, unhoused people are particularly grateful. After walking 3 miles to the cooling center, this is what Robin Brown had to say.
But I love this place.
Mm-hmm.
If I was getting given an award to the best place to help and make you feel better and your pride and make you feel like human,
mm-hmm.
and have compassionate, Safe Space needs to be it. They mm-hmm. need to be noticed. They need to be on the news. They need this.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us would come up forward. A lot of them come to me.
The heat can overwhelm even people who do have a home. Last month, Chico Soul reported on an elderly man who had no power after he fell way behind on utility payments. Justin Bishop and his dog suffered for a full week before his power came back on and switched on his air conditioner. He was surprised. It turned out that caring citizens had stepped in to help. PG&E recently reported it helps people with conditions that make them especially vulnerable during outages and shutoffs. Customers enrolled in PG&E's Self-Identified Vulnerable program can receive extra notice before power is turned off due to non-payment. And there is increased support for rebates and discounts, as well as proactive support during public safety power shutoffs, major emergencies, and multi-day outages. This has been Patrice for Chico Soul. Follow the latest at chicosoul.org. At chicosoul.org, you can also subscribe to our free weekly newsletter, The Little Sun, to get notified about new content and hear directly from our writers. That's chicosoul.org.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. The Chico Police Department posted a warning
on its Facebook page about underage electric bike and motorcycle riders after stopping a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old going 35 to 40 miles an hour on the Esplanade near Shasta Elementary School. Chico PD has a fact sheet for parents and a flyer with California Vehicle Code e-bike definitions on the police department website under Electric Machine Safety Guidelines. The police confiscated the e-motos and returned the riders, one of whom had been warned about the same thing by the same officer the night before, to the custody of their parents. Oroville City Council met Tuesday afternoon. District A Councilor Tracy Johnston is resigning at the end of this week, but council agreed to leave her seat vacant until the November election rather than hold an expensive special election before then or appoint someone in the middle of an active campaign for the seat. Council voted unanimously to send a letter to PG&E to express their disappointment and ask for information about delays and a possible cancellation of the Oroville Rule 20A project. A Rule 20A project is a California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, program in which an investor-owned utility like PG&E converts overhead lines to underground using ratepayer funds. Council also voted to spend $150,000 for a new server and storage. The Butte County Public Health Department announced that the first local person has died this year from the West Nile virus. The deceased was between 80 and 90 years old. Of the 18 human West Nile virus infections in California in 2026, six of them have been in Butte County. The City of Chico Park Division, in partnership with Butte College Arborist Trainees, is conducting fire fuels reduction work on the south side of Upper Bidwell Park between Chico Canyon Road and the Annie Bidwell Trail. The work, which began last week, will continue until the beginning of Labor Day weekend. The goal of the project is to give trainees hands-on experience while removing dead, dying, and overgrown non-native vegetation, also while creating a strategic fuel break. The town of Paradise began road rehabilitation projects on major roads last week. Starting this past Monday, paving began on Pence Row and Oliver Roads. Drivers should expect traffic control and allow extra time for travel. Butte County announced the start of the Dogtown Road Rehabilitation Project this past Monday, August 17th, in unincorporated Magalia. The project will involve clearing and grubbing, grading paving, full-depth reclamation with cement, installation of storm drains, plus striping and signage. During the construction period, Dogtown Road will be closed to traffic 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with traffic rerouted via the Skyway. Work is expected to be completed by October 9th, 2026. The City of Chico announced that starting this past Monday, parking lot B in Middle Bidwell Park will be closed for paving. The work is expected to last 2 weeks. Caltrans is alerting motorists of a full closure of State Route 162 in Willows for paving and road repairs. Work will be taking place from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. today, also Monday and Tuesday, August 24th and 5th. Detours will be in place for passenger vehicles. Commercial trucks need to use an alternate route. And finally, the Community Action Agency of Butte County Incorporated, North State Food Bank, will hold a tailgate food distribution event in Palermo tomorrow, Friday, August 21st, at the Palermo Grange. The event will run from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. or until supplies run out. There's no cost to those attending. Anyone attending should be in a vehicle and follow the traffic flow guides. This is David Foose for Zephyr News.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/donate. Subscribe to Zephyr News on your favorite podcast platform and share your thoughts on social media. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back.